I just want to say, like, when did you know that you were going to be in the revolution?
I'm sitting on a comfy couch across from Luis. He's in his 80s, bald, and he's wearing a short sleeve button down plain white shirt. The same shirt I swore I could have seen my father wearing. But Luis is nothing like my father. He spent his 20s armed alongside Fidel Castro.
Yeah, ¿qué evento pasa con su vida?
I ask him, what event happened in your life to essentially make you join the revolution?
Mira, la lucha comienza para muchos de nosotros.
He says, the fight started with all of us. And then he goes on to tell me about Cuban history. But I'm more curious about him and his story. So I push the question again.
Este evento afecta a su vida mucho.
Muchos cubanos estaban contra la dictadura.
He says Cubans were against the dictatorship. They were against Batista. But I want him to talk about himself. What did he think? How did he feel?
Otros sí.
We go around like this over and over again. I ask him about himself. He tells me about Cubans. It's kind of frustrating. And after an hour and a half, Hannah and I give up. We leave the comfy couches without hearing Luis's personal story. On another day, we're leaving the house of an elderly woman. Hannah was looking to interview her for a story. The woman was polite, but declined the offer. She said her personal story wasn't really that interesting.
So things like that it's like kind of frustrating because you're like, no, you do have an interesting story to tell. Trust me, people want to hear your story. And they're like, no, I don't.
I can't help but hear Luis's voice dodging the opportunity to talk about himself echoed in this woman's response. At a flamenco dance concert, the same one from episode 34, I noticed that there aren't any solo acts. Instead, in every number, there's a big group performing in unison. I lean over to Hannah.
You know how you said, like, the state is everywhere? Mm-hmm. I just wonder, like, as I'm watching this, I wonder if there's, like, a certain kind of dance that they accept. Like, it's so unified as, like, a group.
Everyone does, like, the same thing.
Yeah.
It's very uniform.
Yeah, it's very uniform. Isn't that interesting?
The longer I'm in Cuba, the more I feel like Cubans are hesitant about drawing attention to themselves. What is it about Cuba that makes people want to avoid the spotlight? You're listening to Millennial, a podcast about coming of age. This is the final part to our four-part series about Cuba. And if this is the first time you're listening, I suggest you pause and start at episode 32. In a country with policies that emphasize the collective over the individual, is it possible that this can change the way people see themselves? How much of your identity is you, and how much of it is your country?
A tremendous personal triumph. Castro rode in glory into Havana.
When Castro came to power in 1959, he wanted to change Cuba. But the way he did it was by putting the state first. Always.
Hasta la victoria siempre! Patria o muerte! Vencerán!
The mantra is the homeland or death. And billboard signs off the side of the road, there are also some that read socialism or death.
This is me, like, trying to describe to someone who has never been to Cuba, like, well, why is Cuba frustrating? Like, oh, it's communists. Like, what does that mean? Well, I don't, like, everything is no. The answers are always no. There are a lot of rules here. Everything's illegal. And it's a really frustrating place to try to build anything. Basically, all of the ways in the States you hear the word, like, prosperity or like success or all of these like kind of pro-progress words in Cuba, that sense of like encouragement and empowerment does not exist, and definitely not with youth.
Even though Hannah has told me a lot of her Cuban friends have college degrees but aren't motivated to work, it's still hard for me to wrap my mind around it. It's hard for me to imagine that a government's policies could have such a huge impact on the way young people see the world. I may be naive, but I guess I assumed people my age are driven by passion and ambition. I thought that was innate, not cultural. If a government can influence the way its people think about their goals and their dreams, what else can they change?
Oh, here, Hannah, I'm gonna sit there.
Oh, I know, you just told me that.
We're sitting in Hannah's apartment, putting dishes away after lunch, when she brings out a treat, something you can't easily get in Cuba, and offers it to one of her friends.
That's not cheese, that's...
It's blue cheese.
Jersey Market cheese? That's so specific. Okay, well, I guess we'll just jump into it, huh? So, I have lots of questions.
I'm sitting across from Yawandi, who's immediately different from all of Hannah's other friends I've met before. For one, he speaks English.
When I was a kid, it was forbidden speaking English. So it's like a, I mean, for me, this is a new tool. Be able to speak in English is something that I developed in my life. It's not something that I'm born with that.
When Yawandi was young, speaking English wasn't illegal. It was just that a lot of people were learning Russian. But Yawandi did take it upon himself to learn the language.
You're so driven. Do you think that that's common here?
Sadly, it's not. In Cuba, it's very hard. Actually, when you try to be singular, all that you are doing is you are planning your fall. Because you need to be part of the society.
When Yawandi says, you need to be a part of the society, I'm nodding my head. But as he continues to talk, I realize I don't fully grasp what that means in Cuba.
In Cuba, the government create this environment, this isolated environment, that is saying that everything outside of your comfort zone is terrible, but we are perfect. We have everything that we need.
Patria o muerte, venceron.
So what Fidel did was exactly the same thing that a good father does. I will teach you this, and in exchange you have to belong to my family, otherwise you will be my enemy. I will keep you safe, I will keep you healthy, I will educate you, but in exchange you have to support me forever. It doesn't matter what, it doesn't matter if I make mistakes, I am the good father. They built a comfort zone for an entire generation.
What Yawandi is telling me is if you leave the society or you challenge it, there will be consequences.
I mean, I remember I was a teenager and I felt special. But in my family, I had a lot of punishment because I wanted to be special. And many of them said to me, you are pretentious, you are selfish, you doesn't care about the family, you doesn't care about the people.
Like, individualism is just not taught, right?
No. It's not part of the normal behavior of people. People, if they wanted to be important in the society, they will tell you all the sacrifice that they does for everyone and for the community.
Afecta a su vida mucho.
Muchos cubanos estaban contra.
Luis's voice comes back into my head. Maybe that's why he never wanted to use the word I to talk about himself, because it's never been valued. I think back to all the messages I grew up with.
Fine, but remember, be yourself.
Look inside yourself, Selma. You are more than what you have become. You must take your place in the circle of life.
You are responsible for your life.
Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth.
You can make it here in America.
Everything was about being an individual, about following your heart and pursuing your dreams and being the best you you can be. When I went off to study photojournalism in college, I was doing just that. But Yawandi had a different experience.
The first day when I was a student, an old professor came and said, you will be an architect, but probably any of you will have the privilege to build something.
And none of you will have the privilege.
None of us. So it was like a, forget about that idea.
Forget about the idea that you actually will be building something if you become an architect. But if you do decide to become an architect, there are other compromises you're going to have to make.
When you are trying to create a socialist space, that means that you cannot put your ideas, have to be political. Let's say the concept of this building is the glory of the nation, is the glory of the socialist system. You never could say the concept of this building is the beauty of the woman. They kill your identity, they kill your dreams.
If I had been told that my point of view and vision didn't matter, I have no idea where I'd be today. I'm sure I wouldn't have a podcast called Millennial that's all about documenting personal experiences. If I grew up in Cuba, I wonder how much of how I see myself would have changed.
When you live in an island, you feel like you are missing something. I had that feeling. I was missing something.
Yawandi may have continued to grow up like this, with a sense that something was missing. He might have designed buildings for the state with this void in his heart and forgotten what was it that drew him to architecture in the first place. Except something happened.
I jump out of the comfort zone.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
In 2012, Yawandi received an architecture fellowship to travel to the U.S. for 6 weeks, an opportunity that he could not have predicted.
I was lucky, for sure, I was lucky.
He was excited, but he was also nervous.
You have guns, you have murder, you have, you know, all that you see in the news. So I was traveling to my enemy country.
After a few weeks of learning the pace of New York City, his perceptions of the U.S. started to change.
I mean, we just read a sign that says in New York there is more than 800 different languages. That means a lot of diversity, you know. In Cuba, we don't have that. So that made me feel a little bit uncomfortable with myself because I doesn't knew what I was. When you're born with an identity in your family, they say you are this or you are that. But the problem is when you doesn't born with any identity except be revolutionary or be communist. I'm still looking for my identity. I'm 34 almost.
The moment he left Cuba, he could see himself for the first time outside of the context of his country. But a part of him still didn't feel whole.
After 2 weeks, the real change was when I started to miss Cuba.
What did you miss?
I miss the tiny details, like the coffee. I miss the conversation after lunch. Even the things that I never will miss, I started to miss. And realized that I belong to Cuba. And the funny thing was I had to travel to my enemy country to be proud of myself.
But what happens when Yawandi, a Cuban with a strong sense of self, returns to his country? That's up next. But first, a short break. This episode of Millennial is supported by Warby Parker, a new concept in eyewear. Warby Parker offers a convenient and free home try-on program. You order 5 pairs of glasses in different styles, you get 5 days to try them on, and there's no obligation to buy them. When I picked out my 5 free home try-on glasses, it was kind of like playing a game. Everything was customizable. I could tell Warby Parker that my face is real round, so those are the types of glasses that I need, and I could change the color on the spot. Their glasses start at $95, including prescription lenses with anti-glare and anti-scratch coatings. After you make your picks, you can head to iTunes and download the Warby Parker app. As you try on different styles, you can make a video of yourself and send it to family and friends to help you make your choice. Visit warbyparker.com/millennial, 2 L's, 2 N's, to get started. After Yawande comes back from the U.S., he immediately starts swimming against the current. First, he wants to build his own business.
So your business is not legal, but it's not illegal. It's illegal.
Yawande says his business is illegal, meaning not illegal, but also not legal either. In Cuba, there's actually a list of private businesses that can't exist, 201 to be exact. The government made this list. On the list are occupations that are super broad, like you can be a babysitter, an animal trainer, or a barber, and then others that are super specific, like you can be a private construction contractor, but only in the old town of Havana, or you can be the musical duo Los Amigos. Being a contract architect is not on that list, which is what Yawande is.
The way that they does is they let you to move in that gray limbo, and they control the boundaries. So it's like I will let you, but I will not provide you with the tools, and I will make illegal your sources.
Yawande is constantly frustrated by how hard it is to do basic things, like obtain materials or get on the internet.
It's overwhelming because you feel the pressure. People ask you to know about what is a business plan, what is a internet, and you need to know all the tools. And in the other hand, Cuban government doesn't let you to develop tools. It's like a play. You believe that you are free in the way that you can go out and try yourself. But then you realize that it's a fence. We are in the box. We are inside of a box.
Can you imagine Cuba without the box around it?
The problem with the politics is after several years of only one way to be, now this society is modeled to that way. So right now it's not political anymore. So even if you change the politic in Cuba, we will keep the same shape for many, many years.
The policies of Castro's administration have fundamentally reshaped the way Cubans think. I imagine it would be hard to take the collective thought out of Cuba in the same way that it would be hard to take the individual thought out of America. We're sitting in a restaurant. Ben, my boyfriend, is there, and Hannah and I are talking about our impressions of Cuba on our last night in the country.
The biggest surprise for me, and I reiterate again about Cuba, is thinking about the ideals of the revolution with the reality of today. And the fact that it went from like educating the masses to suppressing the masses.
Yeah, all independent thought.
All independent thought is like suppressed. Yeah. I don't understand how that happens, but it's incredible.
I think there are some older revolutionaries who would agree with you. Like that man who we interviewed, Luis, he said to me before, you know, the difference between youth of today and youth of when I was in the revolution was like we wanted a change and we were intellectuals and we fought for this change. And now everyone's kind of brain dead and apathetic about everything and indifferent about everything. But the irony is, like, his generation was the generation that killed all of it and made sure that they can't have another revolution.
Yes. They created that happen.
Hannah mumbles under her breath that she shouldn't be having these types of conversations.
But that's weird. It's weird to think you're being taped all of the time. My phone's being tapped. Like, the fact that I have my phone with me, someone's listening to my conversation. How far is too far? What's the line when you're being critical and then overcritical?
That's so interesting.
We change the topic. Hannah looks at me and asks what my favorite parts were and what my least favorite parts were during this trip.
I'm saddened by the fact that a lot of young people, like when you say that about your friends, that like nobody has hope or dreams or goals or fire or, I mean, to me, I'm like, okay, that doesn't really, you know what I mean? I'm like,
that can't be true.
Right.
And then you met people. Did it seem...
Or even you just physically see people.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think seeing people who are our age who, like, can't do stuff is, like, very sad to me.
Can't do stuff and, like, maybe don't have the fire to want to, like, get to the place where they want to do stuff.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people in the States who, like, can't do stuff, but, like, they're experiencing kind of, like, a quarter-life crisis. Being like, wow, I need to become a professional immediately. Whereas here it's like, well, you know, things aren't going to get better anytime soon, so why try now?
As we board the plane to travel back to the U.S., I think about the people I've talked to.
Cuando esas personas levantan por su esfuerzo.
Me puede costar 20 minutos 20 en New York, en Ecuador, que estén en
mundo. No teníamos nada. ¿Entiendes?
Welcome again, Southern Can Airlines flight 2750 to Miami. Trunk line time will be approximately 43 minutes.
I think about the people who have looked at Cuba from a bird's eye view before me and wonder if the same questions have passed through their mind. Will Cuba be the Cuba I know today, 5 years from now? Will Yawandi be able to have a successful business someday, doing what he loves in a country that he loves, making enough money to support the people that he loves? Or will his patience wear thin? It's 1 a.m. and I'm climbing into bed with my boyfriend, Ben. Before we fall asleep, we get the news.
Live breaking news.
And that breaking news is from Cuba. Fidel Castro is dead.
Cuban state television reporting Castro's passing just about an hour and a half ago.
Cubans will soon be waking up to a new world. Many of them haven't known a world without Fidel Castro there.
For any change to happen, it's going to happen with the Cuban people.
Immediately, I start thinking about Yawandi, Chema, Lisette, Roberto, and Luis, and I wonder where they are and what they're thinking about. Were their lives about to dramatically change now that Fidel Castro is gone?
And like, imagine, you know, like, where were you? And like,
okay. The night was kind of dying down. We were at a friend's house. We put a movie on, and actually we put on Shame.
Hannah and I are sitting in my kitchen in Maine, about 1,600 miles from Cuba. There's snow on the ground. It's quiet. And Hannah is telling me about what happened the night that Fidel Castro died.
Like 45 minutes after midnight. And it's my friend Jocelyn from Montana, who's like the most American kind of girl in Cuba that I know. She's a very good friend of mine. She said, Fidel died. And I said, Jocelyn, if the news is coming from you right now, like, it's probably not true, you know, like, really, you're going to be the first person to know.
did you say that to her? No.
I think I did say that to her. So about 1 minute later, I get a call from ABC. Let's do this. Are you ready? Like, are you ready? And I'm like, I was born ready. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh God, I have no idea what I'm doing. So, you know, this was my time to shine or really fuck up miserably.
They're celebrating in the streets of Miami's Little Havana, but it is a much different scene in Havana, Cuba. And that is where Hannah Berkeley is this morning.
The news came in many forms late last night. Many Cuban youth were out on the streets socializing as they do any weekend.
Even though I was super excited to see my best friend's byline on the front page of the New York Times and hear her voice reporting for ABC, not everyone had Hannah's experience. For Cubans, this night meant something radically different. Where were you?
So, 1 a.m., my mom called me, so I was scared. What happened? What happened, mom? You know, I was focused on my work, and she said to me, Fidel died.
This is Yoandi. He's also sitting in my kitchen in Maine.
And then we had like a silent minute. I didn't know what to say. She didn't know what to say to me.
What did you say after she told you and there was silence?
You know, it's ridiculous, but I just say, okay. You know, was really uncomfortable. When Fidel died, was like the breaking point of the end of one era, for good or bad.
Even with possible shifting policies in Cuba, Yoandi still doesn't think real change will happen quickly. As you're raising your son right now, who's 2 years old, are you raising him with the idea that he's going to, like, the society he's going to grow up in is the same society that you're in now?
For sure not. For sure not. I mean, I'm not in the same society that my mother and my father. I mean, right now I'm here, I'm in Maine. That, for my mother and my father, was like a, they didn't have that right. And it's in the same government. So for sure, my son will have a different society. I'm very glad to believe in this moment, even if not always is happy. But I'm very glad to have this, to face my reality, you know.
And like you said the other night, like, we have to face our reality too, right?
Yeah, right now it's funny because I used to receive people in Cuba that wanted to see Cuba before the change. And this time I came to United States before the change. I wanted to see United States before the change.
We just got new metrics in. Donald J. Trump is the president of the United States elect.
I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans. And this is so important to me.
For those who have chosen, basically, we are here. I mean, we are friends, not because who we are. We are here because we belong to the same generation, and we understood that we have to build both countries in the both borders. This is kind of exciting and freaky moment. Freaky.
Yeah. It's like, it's weird to be like in a point of a history that you don't realize you're in until you'll look back like 10 years, 20 years from now and be like, oh yeah, I remember when.
It's been nearly 90 years since a U.S. president stepped foot in Cuba.
First commercial flight from the U.S. to the country.
President Obama has ended a longstanding immigration policy for Cubans.
Fidel Castro is dead.
For any change to happen, it's going to happen with the Cuban people.
Devin Taylor edits Millennial, and Justine Paradise helps with production. The voices you heard were Luis Carige, Yoandi Riso Fiallo, and Ben Severance. Our translator for the Cuba series is Ernesto Ariel Suarez. Hannah Berkeley Cohen is our liaison, who guided us through the whole Cuba series and how Cuba exists today. Thank you so much.
Millennial is collaborating with photographer Michael Eastman, who provided the visuals for this episode and has provided the visuals for the entire series. To see his photographs, go to millennialpodcast.org or eastmanimages.com. To keep tabs on Millennial, follow us on Twitter at MillennialPDCST, Facebook, and Instagram. Millennial is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp. Next up on Millennial, we come back to the U.S. to deal with more grown-up things, like taxes.
This is, like, my head hurts. I don't feel like I'm like, oh, I get it.
Why do they cause so much anxiety? We will find out. I'm Megan Tan, and thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.